The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to
This is
Cruise Radio Rewind.
Real reviews from real cruisers.
Welcome to this week's episode of Cruise Radio Rewind. Thank you for making us a part of your day. On this week's show, I have Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy, with us. He's America's most quoted cruise expert. I've been getting a lot of emails since all this Venice talk. Cruise ships being banned from Venice. Are they? Are they not? People that are sailing Venice coming up have someone coming on Norwegian Star. I have a celebrity and one other person emailed me. I think they were going on Holland America and they were worried about Venice. So Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy, is here to clear the air on this and tell us exactly what's going on, because he's been making numerous media appearances to talk about the whole Venice situation. Also have a couple of listener questions to ask him, kind of the state of the cruise industry type questions. One regarding cruise line stocks and where they're going and where they're headed. Another one with private islands. So let's jump right to Stuart. Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Doug. How you doing?
Good, man. Unpack this whole Venice situation for us.
Well, unfortunately, Doug, it's there's a lunatic fringe over there. And like certain places, including our country, we have a small group of people, a vocal minority that don't have a grasp of history. And, they like to live by the moment and think that there's history behind them. The reality is that they're scapegoating cruising to trivialize and, personify their propaganda. So right now, the cruise industry is being scapegoated. Originally, they're saying that, the cruise industry was a cataclysmic cause to the overtourism in Venice. Well, let's unpack that. Venice has got almost 40 million visitors annually, into the city center, but cruising is only bringing 1.4 million people into Venice. The people that are coming by ship are also a whole lot more profitable. The acquisition costs to Venice are a lot lower. These people that are coming in by cruise ship are obviously spending a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're eating in the restaurants. They're shopping in the shops. They're taking the tours, and they're not leaving a whole lot of a footprint or utilizing a whole lot of the resources in Venice. And, you've been to Venice. I've been to Venice many times. And, the reality is that Venice isn't the easiest place to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the easiest place. Okay, you come in on a cruise ship, and it is not an easy endeavor to get to a hotel. Am I right?
Totally.
The boats, having to schlep your luggage, over bridges, over step bridges, and having to carry it and up and over and taking boats and water taxis. It could take you half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour to find your hotel, to get around. It's an amazing place to visit, but it's a very, very difficult place to stay in. It's more difficult if you were going to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have these companies. Now, I remember the mayor of Venice or someone who had recently said that someone had asked, what time does Venice close?
Mm-hmm.
Alluding to the fact that someone actually thought Venice was a theme park. It is actually an interesting analogy because it almost seems like that. A lot of the museums, people aren't really going there. They're going to walk around. They want to go to San Marcos Square. They want to go up to the tower. They want to walk around, they want to shop, they want to eat. If they can, the problems in Venice, the biggest problem in Venice is overdevelopment.
Mm-hmm.
And if they keep, if your family had an apartment building with, let's say, 10 apartments in it, and Gucci came and offered you, they wanted to open up a shop there or a small boutique hotel, and they offered you $50 million, well, you're gone.
Yeah.
You're going to take the money and you're going to run.
Definitely.
And so what happens is it just takes apartments or, places to live out of the inventory. But the reality is that if they keep building hotels, they keep building restaurants, they keep building shops, and there are fewer places to live. It's not like, they have big grocery stores. I mean, you're going to, in order to get to the mainland, in order to go to a big store, you're going to have to take a train, you're going to have to get on a bus, and it's a schlep.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get there, you have to come back. And that's why a lot of people don't want to live there. I had shared with you a Time magazine from July 25th, 1969, which was to really commemorate the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And in there, surprisingly, was an article entitled Venice Under Siege. The same issues now. You know, Venice is sinking. Well, Venice has been sinking since 421 AD when the city was founded. It's nothing that the cruise industry did. You know, for almost 1,600 years, Venice has been sinking. It's on a very soft foundation. And so here 50 years ago, you know, decrepit buildings, the flooding in San Marcos Square, which has been happening forever, has nothing to do with the cruise ships. So going back to my original comment, how the cruise industry is being scapegoated, because before, when they were talking about the over-tourism, they weren't getting a whole lot of attention.
Yeah.
But then when they used the pictures of these ships that are sailing past San Marcos Square in the afternoon at, 4 or 5 o'clock at night, and you have thousands of people going out there to take pictures, I actually think it's a beautiful sight. You know, I remember 2012, believe it or not, we were on Carnival Breeze. You were sailing out. We decided to actually get off in Venice and end the cruise there. And it was midnight. We were coming out on a gondola into San Marcos Square, and you called me from your cell phone from the Carnival Breeze as you were sailing away. You know, we were waving at each other, and I mean, it was a spectacular sight to see. It's an amazing city to sail into.
Fast forward to today, what is the status with the cruise ships visiting Venice? Like, if someone has a cruise coming up, should they be worried?
Right now, no. There's been a lot of misreports about a meeting that occurred in the Italian government last week. The industry and the government of Italy have been working to find a solution or an alternative route for the ships to get to the port to dispel the myths. You know, the cruise ships are very respective and very cognizant of the environmentalists. So essentially what they have is they have three tugboats, a minimum of three, but the larger ships will have four tugboats, two in the front, two in the back, leading them out or leading them in to ensure that there aren't issues. Unfortunately, what happened with MSC Opera back in June, you know, where it collided with a riverboat in the port, it was an accident. Wasn't it on purpose? It was an issue with the ship. Never happened before. It's never really happened in history, you know, with the tens of thousands of departures and arrivals of all these ships all over the world. I mean, this was a freak accident, but it's being used as a rallying call that the cruise industry is a danger to Venice. So as far as passengers going now, the answer is no, I wouldn't worry about it. There are no other suitable facilities right now that would be able to pass muster to make it safe for the cruise ships to visit. And if they try to, it just defeats the purpose. I mean, they want to put the ships on the mainland. Then, you know, the passengers would have to either be bused or take trains in and out of Venice. It just creates a whole lot more traffic. And if they're talking about trying to be intermilely friendly, I mean, you're adding thousands of additional trips on the road and causing a whole lot more pollution than what they're trying to avoid. There are other viable solutions, altering the routes. They've already got a port. There's no reason to spend hundreds of millions or up to $1 billion on new facilities. I mean, this is just, hopefully, you know, cooler heads will prevail.
I want to change gears here and talk about the state of the cruise industry for a moment. How is the cruise industry doing as a whole right now? Because if you were just to look at the Carnival Corporation stock, you'd think it was a very volatile industry.
Well, Doug, if you looked at all of these stocks collectively, and if you listen to the earnings calls, bookings are ahead of same time last year. Booking prices are higher than they were year over year. The industry as a whole is doing incredibly well. Record number of ships are under construction, and a record number of ships are sailing the high seas now. The ships are sailing full overall and at higher prices. Specifically speaking, as far as Carnival Corporation, there's a lot that the cruise lines or the cruise companies themselves do to control their stocks. And, you know, listen, you have a lot of investors, Doug, that invest and base, their buys and sells on which way the wind is blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Carnival Corporation is dealing with the environmental issues that were caused by its Princess Cruises brand, regard to the polluting, the dumping, and how they're reporting, and they've got it under control. The industry as a whole is taking great strides to continue to be a better partner to the oceans. I mean, look, it is in their best interest to be the best operators, because the sea is where these ships are operating. And as an investor, to get a stock when it's at a low point is always a good idea, because it's only going to go up.
Listener question from Billy: how are these new investments in private islands going to impact cruise pricing?
That's a great question. The cruise lines, many of the cruise lines are investing heavily in the private island experiences. As we've seen with companies like Disney, everyone would love to be able to. All the cruise lines would love to be able to get Disney pricing. But some of them have had all kinds of characters from other companies, and no one has been able to replicate the Disney success. Disney is Disney, mm-hmm. And the private islands for all the lines have done very, very well and continue to do well. But there has been an exception, with Royal Caribbean's private island in the Bahamas that they just put $250 million in. At Coco Cay, it's extraordinary how $250 million can transform an island. And because of the success of the island and the demand, they are going to be bringing in more and more ships. And the prices on those ships have greatly increased, especially in the 3 and 4 day market, currently on Navigator of the Seas. Recently, reintroduced ship where they put in millions and millions of dollars into the recent upgrades, but the island is very hot. They've got thrill areas with 21 slides, chill areas, beautiful beaches. They have the fifth largest freshwater pool in the world on the island. So there's really something for everyone. And for a period of time, you're going to have a lot of people willing to pay a premium price to go to an island like that. But then you also have NCL, and you have Holland America with Half Moon Cay, which is one of the most beautiful islands owned by the cruise lines, and we know that Carnival Cruise Line, is going to possibly put the Fun Day at Sea on hiatus or kind of tone it down, because their passengers are also going to be going to Half Moon Cay, and a lot of these islands like Coco Cay can have one, two, possibly three ships visiting at one time, which would be interesting as more and more facilities on these islands are built. So it's hard to say, that for a lot of the lines, Doug, the cruise lines, have been building these islands as additional stops to enhance the cruise itinerary. So here you're going to different ports in the Caribbean, and now you have an opportunity to go to this private island, and it's a beach day. You're going to have, kind of a much more laid-back experience than you would if you were into a major port and running around all day. So it has been very successful for all of the cruise lines in being able to provide a destination that they can control. And Royal Caribbean is expected to start making announcements on some of the other islands that they're going to be building or debuting outside of the Caribbean soon.
Royal Caribbean invests $200 million in Perfect Day. Carnival Corporation is about to invest like $80 million in Half Moon. And Norwegian invested millions into Great Stirrup. Is this translating to...
Oh, that was actually Harvest Cay, which is near Belize.
Right, okay.
Great Stirrup Cay, which originally was known as Pleasure Island, they put $20 million into
right.
it, but it's still not like the theme park type of an experience that they'll see at Coco Cay.
So my question is, though, with investing all this money in these private islands, is the mentality of the cruise line like, we need to recoup this investment, let's raise the cruise prices?
Well, in general, they are, but they also have to provide new or enhanced experiences on these itineraries to continue to get repeat business. So it's a necessary investment, and what Royal Caribbean did specifically was really, outside the stadium of what the other cruise lines have done. It was above and beyond. It's like, you can refurbish a ship, you can, replace a propeller, you can change the upholstery in the lounges, or you can replace the beds. But what they did was significantly more extensive than just a routine dry docking to really make this experience on this particular private island much more outlandish, extravagant than what you'd have on other islands. But these private islands are destinations that the cruise lines are using to enhance their itineraries to differentiate themselves from each other.
Finally here, Stuart, there's a lot of new hardware coming online over the next few years. Is there anything truly unique out there, or are all these ships just a carbon copy of each other?
What we've got, you know, coming in this year, we've got Sky Princess, which is, you know, part of the Royal class, Norwegian Encore, which is, you know, a breakaway plus, you know, the next ship. I mean, we're not going to see a new ship, you know, the Leonardo class until, what, 2022, I believe, from NCL. But a lot of the ships are copies of the other ships, but they tend to have new features that will somewhat differentiate them. But there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, next year in 2020 with Crystal Endeavor making its debut, you know, Ritz-Carlton and Virgin Cruises, Silver Sea is coming out with their Silver Origin, Celebrity Apex will be coming out. That's one of the most spectacular ships ever built, and to have a second reiteration of it is going to be quite amazing. But I think looking in 2020, you've got a brand new class of ships for Carnival with Mardi Gras, and which will also be the first LNG, you know, liquid natural gas ship to debut into the United States. There's a lot of exciting ships coming online, and you know, in 2020, you know, I'm looking forward to Royal Caribbean's Odyssey of the Seas, which will, you know, be the first Quantum class ship really, you know, debuting in the United States since Anthem. Of the Seas, and which was, I guess, 2015, so it'll be 5 years. So, there's a lot of, you know, great ships on the near horizon. Some are copies of other ships, but they're all doing extraordinarily well and doing a lot to attract past passengers as well as new passengers.
What are your thoughts about Virgin Voyages? Do you think they'll be able to fill up every ship, every sailing with the North American market, or do you think they'll be sourcing from European audience as well?
I think they're going to be sourcing also from the European audiences. I mean, you know, that's where the brand is, you know, very well known. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are interested to see, you know, what this brand can be doing, and to have, you know, to have a Virgin product, you know, sailing into the Bahamas and into the Caribbean. I think it's going to attract a lot of people, and it doesn't have as much brand recognition here in the States as it does in, you know, let's say in Europe. But I think it's going to have quite a following, and I think it's going to be an interesting experience. And I'm looking forward to giving it a spin when she arrives. But there's going to be, you know, a lot of differences. I don't think they understand totally, you know, dealing with you know, they're ridiculing buffets. And we really haven't seen the buffets that they're, you know, slapping around or poo-pooing on, you know, since the early 1900s. I mean, these are all really kind of restaurants that they have on board. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they deal with, like, breakfast, for example, or people are just looking for something kind of quick on the go, or lunch, and how these restaurants that they're designing can help people that, you know, they don't want a 2 or 3 hour dining extravaganza. They just want something kind of quick and, you know, be able to be done in anywhere at 30 minutes or less. But, you know, look, having met, you know, Richard Branson and spent some time talking to them about what they're trying to do, he hasn't been on a cruise ever in his life, but he wants to, you know, he wants to help devise something to have fun with. I mean, not that the other ships aren't any fun, so that's why it'll be interesting. But he said, you know, it's just like, it's a place for adults to go, be able to let their hair down and have a good time. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
We've been talking with Stuart Chiron, the Cruise Guy, America's most quoted cruise expert. You can find him online at cruiseguy.com or follow him on Twitter at Cruise Guy. Stuart, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes and talking with us this morning. Have a good one, buddy.
My pleasure, Doug.
All right. Before we go here, you'll want to tune into next week's Cruise Radio Rewind. This is what we call a tease. I had a chance to sit down with a crew member and ask that crew member a lot of questions about life below deck, gratuities, how the cash is really distributed, and probably a lot of other questions that you may have and you could never get the answer to. I'm not going to air their voice on the show next week because I don't want to expose this person and get them in trouble. I will say that it is a tip or gratuity position on the ship. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say the cruise line, what cruise ship, or anything like that. So we'll be reading the questions and answers on next week's Cruise Radio Rewind. If you're in the Cruise Radio News Facebook group, chances are that your question got answered as well. If you're not, we'd love to have you. Just type in Cruise Radio News on Facebook, and I will talk to you on Thursday. Take care.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.